This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices, united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
Yo, what's shaking, everybody? It is the weekly Orange Bloods Modcast. I'm Jeff Ketchum, joined by Alex Anwar Jason, and at some point, Dustin McComas. He's trying to get into this Zoom call, and it's proving to be more difficult for him than any reasonable person could expect. But fellas, the last time we were doing a modcast, we were all talking about an instant reaction. And at that point, Steve Sarkisian hadn't even done his press conference yet. This was just it was a modcast to react to Herman out and Steve Sarkisian in. Now we reconvene. We're back together again, the entire group, except for Dustin, who's stuck out in the Twilight Zone as we get started. And reactions to kind of where we are. Like, it's now been, 96, 100 plus hours since this whole thing went down. And it really, Saturday feels like a long time ago. We've been on the assistant coaching search trail. We're still waiting for the defensive coordinator hire to become obvious. We're still waiting for Alabama to finish its season so that there can be a true introductory press conference. I mean, it's strange that we're still in the very beginning of all of this, and yet it does feel like the last 5 days have been more like 2 weeks, and it hasn't been on war.
Yeah, it's been crazy because, I mean, we're really talking about a week ago or so, and it's just crazy that we're here. So we're in this kind of like process. It's like Tom Herman's gone. We've got a new coach that's in, but he's not here. So, like Tom Herman, essentially when he got hired, he didn't coach in the bowl game. So he kind of hit the ground running pretty quickly and assembled a staff pretty quickly and was kind of done with it. Well, this guy has, a week or so to get ready for a national championship game, which, by the way, is kind of important, right? I don't think the thing that Sarkisian wants out there is that he's more focused on putting together a staff than trying to get ready for, a national title game. And then, of course, it's rumor season. So because it's rumor season, you see a lot of possibilities, potentials, thinking about interest and, just a lot of shit that's just being thrown on the wall, which at the end of the day, the most fans are, there's so many names that get thrown at them that they don't even remember what was what. Like, we probably don't remember who was a candidate on Monday, as opposed to where we're recording here on a Thursday. So, just a lot of bullets flying as he starts to put together his staff. And, I think Texas fans normally who watch the national title game will be watching it with even more interest on Monday.
Jason, what about you? Slightly different perspective in that you've certainly been – knee deep, face first into the recruiting component of all of this. And there's multiple recruiting classes to get reactions from. Just as we get started, kind of your opening impressions of what the first 100 hours of the Steve Sarkisian era have felt like from your perspective.
Hard to believe it's been less than a week. Has it been 100 hours? I'll trust your math on that, Ketch. But I think it's been exciting, man. It kind of renewed interest or excitement in recruiting and just the potential of the program. And, we always say, hey, we're not fans. Our jobs don't allow us to be fans, but I think we'd all admit our jobs are more enjoyable when there's optimism and when things are going well. So, I guess my first impression is it's been fun. It's been hectic. There's been a lot of, news to cover in terms of coaching stuff and, couple of recruiting news and notes popped up here and there already. So before he's even made his way to Austin. So it's going to be fast and furious, I think, for the next few weeks. But I think people should be very excited. I mean, I've said it before. I like the hire. I'm optimistic it's going to be a good hire for Texas. And that feels good to say for the first time in a couple of years.
Alex, strangely enough, you've been on deep dig duty, so you've been breaking down the bowl game still. Like, it's strange. It wasn't that, Like, when we talk about it has been 100 plus hours, Jason, I redid the
math. You had your calculator out, didn't you?
No, I just, you know, I'm able to add 48 plus 48.
That's together. Close to 100. Close enough. We'll round up.
And there. It's more than 4 days. Four days.
Well, no, Kesh, your first clue should have been 5 times 20 is at least 100, and each day is 24 hours. Right. So you take the five.
Yeah.
Times 20,
I mean, there's a lot of ways to get there. All I'm saying is it's almost been what it has almost Fingers been toes. Is five full days since the Herman firing was announced. Like, I think we are roughly what's like 120 hours. I think it's probably been 118 hours since that happened. So, yeah, we're well over the first 100 hours. And yet Alex is, you know, put just yesterday, wasn't it yesterday? The last 5 days feel like 5 weeks in a way that the Tyler Johnson grade comes out, which was really interesting. There's actually some football stuff that we can get into at some point, but just your vibe, you know, as a guy that once upon a time was an Orange Bloods poster and has got, you've experienced the Orange Bloods experience, the full gamut of it. What has it seemed like from your perspective as we break in a new coaching era?
Yeah, dating back to Ryan Perilou. I mean, where do I start? I mean, I don't know, man. It's been a weird week with doing that because, I mean, as you guys know, I've had to step like outside my general zone this week with having to make these calls and stuff and, you know, trying to keep up with the coaching search and doing all that. So like that's taking time away from being able to do the normal film breakdowns as I normally would. I would have gotten those out usually within 4 days is what it takes me. It took me 5 days this time. It feels like, maybe I felt a little bit like Steve Sarkisian this week, having to do my regular job and having this new stuff too. That's just, you know, exciting that you want to, you know, keep an eye on and make sure that you're on top of. But to me, I said it on the podcast last week. I was happy with the hire. I think it's a good one. I think maybe even as compared to other people who follow the program the same way that I do, maybe a little bit more happy about it than some of those have, because, and I'm sure we'll get into the coaching staff stuff. That's what people want to hear about. But my opinion early on was that this was going to be a guy who was going to bring in the coaching staff and you know, hopefully have a little bit of a, I don't know, maybe just a little bit. It's like we talked about last week, like whenever Anwar said, a guy that's not going to be tied to, any dead weight as far as these coaches, a guy who, you know, has this 1 second shot. He's not going to want to screw it up. He's been down this road before. He will have learned from his mistakes. And it's just been interesting. They're here this waiting game while we get ready for Alabama to play for a national championship. I find myself consistently thinking about Coach Sarkisian and how hard it must be to be able to, you know, keep his focus on that and keep his commitment to that team and Coach Saban while also having to basically make some of the biggest decisions of his life about how the next, you know, 5-6 years of his career are going to unfold.
Dustin, welcome to the podcast. You haven't missed anything yet. We're still kind of in opening remarks in terms of just kind of addressing the fact that it's a new era of Texas football, and we've had now some time to absorb this opening week of the Steve Sarkisian era. Just before we jump into defensive coordinator talk and all that stuff, your opening impressions of the last 5 days.
Yeah, well, the last 5 days seems like it was like 30 days, you know, with how much happened on Saturday and everything that's kind of happened since then. And, you know, my impressions, I'm still kind of the same, you know, feeling about the hire. I think it's got a lot of potential. I think that, you know, the Texas fans on our message board are fairly very invested in what this staff is going to look like, because that's a very important component. Although I would say, let's see what happens after the national championship game. If we can just get to that game and then see what kind of happens after that, I think the picture will become even more clear than it already is. But I still think this, you know, I kind of feel the same about this hire, you know, now that I've had some time to kind of dissect it and we've, you know, heard some things about what the staff might look like. I still think this has a lot of potential. But, you know, the staff is going to be a very important component. And I think everybody's heavy interest in that. is warranted. But I would just say if we could just get to the national title game and then see what happens from there, I think we'll have a much better picture of what's going on. But, you know, no different feeling about Steve Sarkisian the more I've dug in on him. And I still think this was an upside play by Texas from the standpoint of what is college football right now. It's quarterback recruiting and development. It's scoring points. It's recruiting overall. And can you build a really good coaching staff that can help you do all those things? And if you can, you've got a chance. I mean, the quarterback component to me, and this is something, you know, Alex, when you were rattling off those names that Steve Sarkisian's worked with a few days ago, I mean, that's a really critical component. If you just kind of look at the landscape of college football and who's been able to be consistent. And, you know, I think to it, one of the more maybe kind of not hyped things, but it's kind of, we're starting to see it a little bit, is the California connection with Steve Sarkisian. You know, the comments from CJ Williams, a really, really good player at Matter Day. I just think that state in particular is going to be worth paying very close attention to, because Texas' new head coach has some big time connections out to some power programs out there.
Dustin, we'll circle back to the recruiting component, especially the California thing that you just mentioned, because and I think we talked a little bit about this on Saturday. You know, when Charlie showed up, his what fit like a glove for him was Florida. And we saw in that first year that while they built up Texas stuff, that, you know, it was important to be able to supplement that with those other areas. And I think California is going to be that. But before we go too deep into recruiting, the defensive coordinator hire is the most important hire that they'll say things like it's the strength and conditioning coach. And yet they never fire strength and conditioning coaches, right? I mean, Tom and all their guys go, it's the last thing a coach ever fires. So presumably it's not that important. Otherwise we'd see them do it earlier. Jason and I were talking to the same guy who has some connections to Barry Odom earlier in the week. It's too bad that Barry Odom is presumably no longer in the mix. If you take the Arkansas stuff this week on social media at face value, but we Jason and I got some decent intel on Odom's wiring. And this guy was just, you know, third party information was just like, hey, Odom knows the game. He's like, Steve Sarkisian comes in. He's an offensive guy. He's calling the plays. It's his offense. So anybody that comes in as the defensive coordinator will be the first person that gets blamed. He's the only guy that can get fired. And that won't be for everybody. That, you know, and this particular source, and Jason, I don't know if he told you this or not, or I just know that we ended up talking to the same person at one point on the same day. He was like, that won't fit him at all. That he won't work well under the pressure of knowing that the very first time something goes sideways, it'll be his neck on the chopping block. And I was like, oh, okay, well, maybe Barry Odom won't work out at Texas because this place
fish
is a
bowl
hot
was the term used for me. Like, you won't handle the fishbowl in Austin very well.
So. And I was like, this place is nothing if it's not a fishbowl. So I say all of that to bring up the defensive coordinator thing is the one thing that really publicly, you know, today Dan Quinn's name's been thrown around, which I'll just say right now, if Steve Sarkisian can take a guy that just finished a 5-year head coaching run that went to the Super Bowl and was a defensive coordinator for one of the most famous defenses in the history of the sport, if he can get that guy to come to college and not even as a head coach, but as a coordinator, he is Mac Brown reincarnated.
He can recruit anybody at that point.
At that point, he can make anything happen. But we've now reached the Dan Quinn portion of the defensive coordinator reports, rumors, discussion, whatever.
I will say that defense he runs, that old Seattle defense, that variant of the Tampa 2, it feels like it's kind of lost its way as far as the NFL. It feels like the NFL has solved that a little bit. So, I mean, that could be part of Sarkisian's pitch. I don't know. But I'm not sure he's going to be a hot name as far as an NFL defensive coordinator. That's for sure.
he'll get another head coaching job because every white dude that's ever coached an NFL team as a head coach.
That's not true. I guarantee you he's not getting another head coaching
job. How many did Adam Gates get a second chance?
Well, but the whole deal with Adam Gates, I mean, Adam Gates is a weird story.
I'll make you a lunch bet that Dan Quinn gets another head coaching job.
He's not going to get one, but yes.
I'll make you a bet. Let's take that bet.
Let's take the bet. I'll take it every day of the week.
I will cash that bet
after all the terrible losses, after all the terrible come from behind losses and he's
average NFL head coaches fall forward all the time.
Didn't Jason Garrett just get interviewed?
I mean, what are we talking about here? Come on. He's been to the Super Bowl.
I'm with Ketch. It's happening. It might take a year, but it's happening.
I'll take the bet with you too, Dustin.
That's fine. Mark it.
Whoever did the swear jar, I'm breaking your wallet on that one.
You know this. Oh, you're crazy. Average coaches don't get set. He'll get a third coaching job before he doesn't get a second one. We'll see. But we are now at the Dan Quinn falls to college. And then not only does he fall to college, he doesn't even go to Alabama. He goes to a program that hasn't won, you know, whatever Texas hasn't won since, you know, 2009. I'm sorry. It just sounds so preposterous when you say it out loud. But let's talk about the defensive coordinator position because Anwar, this is the one. I mean, I wrote about it this past weekend that Tom Herman and Charlie Strong ultimately, like, they delivered their own mortal blow to themselves by not getting it right with the first hires that, you know, they both had to redo offensive coordinators. With Charlie, you had the Vance Bedford thing and taking over the – just both guys got it wrong. Steve Sarkisian is his own offensive coordinator, which makes – that's why you can make the case he's a perfect hire for Texas. But it does mean better get that DC right or it's the kind of thing that eventually costs coaches their jobs.
I mean, catch though. I mean, like, I think that's the DC is important. But if you look at the past two coaches, they got pretty much all their staff wrong. I mean, when Charlie Strong got hired, the only guy remaining from his original staff in that in their position was Brian Jean Marie. Vance Bedford had gotten demoted. After the OU game at some point, and so pretty much every guy that he hired outside of Brian Jean was a bad hire. Tom Herman fired seven of his guys. And so, you know, and then had to bring in a bunch of new ones. So arguably he got pretty much all of those guys wrong. So I hear what you're saying about the DC position. Yeah, the DC position is important, but damn, like the last two pretty much messed up. The lowest amount was seven. And the highest amount was nine. And even when Tom Herman actually technically brought in Herb Hand, who remember, you know, they added in the additional coaching position. So he didn't fire her, but most people would say that wasn't really the best hire. So you can technically say eight of his guys weren't that good. So, getting the DC position, absolutely. I totally agree with you, Ketch. But the last two hires have really struggled on hiring an entire staff, period.
It's 100% fair.
And man, when you put it like that, it does put it into perspective, doesn't it?
And look, and we'll get to the totality of it all, but like first things first, it's, you know, I think it's interesting that we feel like we've got an idea of what the offensive staff is going to look like. Nothing is completely official yet, right? I mean, I guess Stan Drayton is as about as official as, unless there's a press release we're going to get. But you got guys that are still coaching in games and stuff, but over on the defensive side of the ball, it matters who that guy's going to be because every defensive coordinator wants to bring in at least one guy with him, and he wants to be able to say, here's who I work with, right? I mean, so it feels like before you can run, you have to walk on that side of the ball, and it feels like up at this point, Blake Gideon – who does appear headed his exact titles, it remains to be seen whether or not he'll be the special teams coach or I mean, it would make sense, right? Yeah. Alex, we didn't even have to have the battle. It would make sense because it would be a backwards position in terms of responsibilities to go from winning an award as a special teams coach to just not doing it. But it's out there. But it feels like as a safeties coach that, you know, that was Chris Ash's gig. And I don't know where we start. Would we start with I guess the Chris Ash thing, Jason, is where we should start. He's under contract for another couple of years. There seemed to be in a world where
one more year.
He has one more year left.
Yeah, he's the one of the guys that only did a 2-year deal because there was something with his Rutgers buyout. And so all the other coordinators did 3-year deals. He actually only did a 2-year.
Oh, well, I stand corrected. Thank you very much. No problem. He's still on contract for another year. So that in itself, you know, maybe that plays into it. Maybe that Chris Ash says, look, I got a year left and I'll have options. I don't know what his relationship is with Steve Sarkisian, but there's a vast component of Texas fans that have heard some of the names that have mentioned. And they feel like, no, you know what? Another year of continuity. Chris Ash was doing a good job. He's already under contract. These guys aren't as good as he is. Why won't he just keep Chris Ash if it means taking some guy that I've never personally heard of? I think Chris Ash has done a decent job, but it's been a while since he's been great. It wasn't like this defense was great. And I think that because this is the most important hire that Tom Herman, there it is. First time I've done that. Steve Sarkisian will make. I mean, this is as important as anything else he does, because this is the side of the ball that he's got to give control away to. So this is the person that will really co-define what this era of Texas football looks like as it gets started and tries to get up off the ground. He's got to hire his guy. It's got to be his decision. And if he's uncomfortable, for me, even a little bit with Ash, just it's not my guy, it's not ideal, I don't like – whatever his reasons might be, I mean, that's just a sunken cost. And I think that, you know, for me, he's just got – I don't know who that guy is yet. And it'll be fascinating to see where they go.
If it was going to be Ash, don't you think that decision would already have been made? I mean, if it's Ash at this point – doesn't it almost feel like he kind of settled for Ash?
I think Ash would settle for being settled for.
Probably. Well, probably.
Maybe. Listen,
but and I hate to say, I mean, I think Ash would be a fine, a decent enough choice. I think he did a fine job in his, you know, at Texas last year. But it just feels to me like all these other names are being thrown out there that he's talked to this guy and he's talked to this guy and Odom and, you know, Coach Boom and all these guys, you know, so it's like, okay, it almost feels like if it ends up being Ash, okay, yeah, I think everybody'd be okay with that, but that feels like it's option 3, 4, 5, somewhere down the line. So I don't know. I just think if Ash was that guy that was that strongly in play, I think we'd already have that answer by now.
Do you guys, one thing that I was just wondering, I'd be interested to hear what you guys think. Do you think it's at least interesting that some of these guys that have gotten brought up, like Odom and Arnett, and I mean, maybe to some degree Tosh Lupoi too, but not so much with him, is that these are a lot of these odd front 3-3-5 kinds of guys. They've been running these 3-3-5 kind of odd stacks recently. Like, with Texas transitioning to more of the a 4-3 nickel kind of base under Ash, and, you know, in my opinion, maybe having some bodies that sort of fit that scheme a little bit better. Do you think that's anything that's being taken into consideration, just what the actual defensive alignment is?
I think it should be. That's a good question, Alex. I've seen the same thing with these 3-man fronts. I'm like, man, there's a reason Texas went away from that, partly with Ash. I mean, they wanted Ash to begin with, but it was impacting their recruiting abilities as well. So I think it should be a factor, whether or not it's something – Sarkisian's way, and I can't answer that, but I do think it's something that should be considered.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I just I whenever you look at the backgrounds of these guys, it's kind of like when you look at Tosh, he's, you know, he obviously has studied 3-4 a bunch, you know, during his time that he's worked closely with Saban and some of these others, but you know, he at the NFL level, he's coached for like 4-3 defensive ends, and so I think that, you know, that could be, you know, somebody like that could maybe be a little bit more multiple. I think that probably when we finally do get the defensive coordinator hire and that question gets asked, what they're going to say is the plan is to be attacking and the plan is to be multiple and et cetera, et cetera. But the fact of the matter is, if they don't have that fourth kind of bigger body down on the line of scrimmage for, you know, 60% of plays or something like that, I think that, like Jason said, it could be detrimental to recruiting. And I felt like, you know, maybe a lot of what fans thought Chris Ash brought to the defense this year, you know, it was certainly a lot to do with his coaching, but I also think it had a lot to do with the scheme. It's like Jason said, man, they kind of wanted to get away from that scheme for a reason. So.
No, I'm flabbergasted that so many Texas fans, and this, I shouldn't say that, right? There's just, because it's not even as if those of us who are the zoo animals on Orange Bloods and are constantly posting so that the zoo patrons can look at the animals. Like, it's a much narrow like representation of the Texas fan base. So you be careful to loosely say Texas fans, but the discussion on Orange Bloods, it is a little surprising to me that the people, so many people in the last couple of days, as this conversation has taken place and everybody's picked a favorite, when it comes to the conversation of scheme, Alex, it is as if they've forgotten that. And they, you know, they were better suited for a 4-3 scheme. It probably would have looked like that even better if a guy like Marquez Bemidji stays around, and then you realize, you know, oh, that guy really is better in a 4-man front than what was being asked of him the year before. But it wasn't working. The talent didn't quite fit it, in part because you're recruiting from the state of Texas on the high school level. And, you know, they just were recruiting tweeners in terms of, ironically, they bring in some guys in this last recruiting class that might fit a 3-man line better than it had previously. But from a recruiting standpoint, Jason's right. Like, you know, they were getting killed in recruiting against defensive linemen.
It was directly being used against them with guys like
why would you want to go play there?
Yeah. Well, they were also looking at the stats. I mean, hey, look at their defensive line.
That's what I'm saying.
You know, one or two sacks a game.
It's not designed for you to put up the kind of numbers that make for an All-American. Like, you want to go there and do grunt work, or do you want to come be a star? And, you know, that's a really simple way of – but that's how it was used in recruiting. And it's just a little weird for me to see Texas fans so soon forget what had really been problematic before Chris Ash arrived.
It was A&M using that argument, and that ain't going away. If they go back to a 3-man front, Jimbo's going to pull that right back out of his pocket. So,
well, and I mean,
I'd be surprised if they went primarily to a 3.
I think Alex is right. Yeah, multiple.
Yeah, it's multiple. I mean, if you look at what Marcus Freeman was doing at Cincinnati, for example, I mean, it was people would kind of label it sometimes as a 3-3-5, but they'd be in a 4-3 sometimes. They'd be in a 4-2-5 sometimes. I mean, they were kind of changing formations almost by the snap. You know, they just had the personnel to do that. So, yeah, I would be really surprised if it was primarily a 3-man front thing. I think that, you know, multiple is such a buzzword. I think that's something that coaches really look for, and I think that's probably a fair way to describe Arnett, and especially Freeman. We know that's a way to describe him.
I'm so glad you just brought up Freeman's name, Dustin, because that's exactly where I was about to go. Isn't the reality – because we know LSU. I mean, he was in Baton Rouge yesterday interviewing for the job. There's been – I've seen the numbers. I can't tell you exactly who's reported it, but there's been – scuttlebutt, since I can't officially say who reported, I guess I'll just frame it that way. There's been scuttlebutt that he could be looking at like $2.2 million a year from LSU. He is the hottest. Hottest doesn't always mean best, but he is the hottest name in the defensive coaching world in college football. Notre Dame and LSU are both, you know, hot to trot for him. We know that there's some interest on the Texas side of things to talk. I mean, given the profile of what he does from a scheme standpoint, his profile, he's hot, that he's young. I mean, to me, Freeman fits the profile of what Steve Sarkisian seems to be looking for in his staff. And it feels like that to me, that's the name to watch for the rest of this weekend, because there are so many big boys who are positioning themselves to vie for him, and that, you know, that it could turn into a bidding war. And those are supposed to be the things that Texas is supposed to be in the best position to win. I'm fascinated to see where this goes, because he fits the profile of the dream hire for Steve Sarkisian. And, you know, I don't think the cat at Mississippi State quite moves the meter the way I think from a story stand. Because what Steve Sarkisian knows he needs is a story. What's his story in recruiting? And what is he selling to guys? And I just think that the Freeman story is one that immediately connects in ways that Arnett necessarily – nobody in this state knows who Arnett is. He doesn't have any reputation for developing NFL players. I mean, he was sensational this year at Mississippi State. He is a coach on the rise. But I don't know that you can sell Arnett to recruits on a national level, because there isn't a big enough of a track record. Those kids were not watching Mississippi State football this year. He hasn't developed any NFL players. At this point, he's been a defensive coordinator for only a couple of years. And I don't know that he just has the name brand that I think comes with Freeman, right? Weirdly enough, from Cincinnati, but I think you could be able to go into a living room and say, this guy's going to be a head coach in a couple of years, but as long as you're with me, we are going to put together the single best coaching staff in America that you can play for. And right now, this guy is it. Is there anybody else that, you know, because you could kind of do that with Will Muschamp. If Muschamp was a guy that really wanted the job, you're saying we've got one of the best defensive minds in the history of college football. This is a guy that was the coach at South Carolina. This guy produces in the NFL. To me, there's a story that this hire has to make, and some of the names I've seen haven't quite told that story. I think a couple of names do.
Yeah, anybody? The only other name I can think of off the top of my head would maybe be what Kevin Steele at Auburn with. You know, I don't think he's expected to be back, considering there's like a bunch of boosters that are trying to push him into becoming the head coach at Auburn. So I'm not sure if he's going to want to stay there. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, watching the Cincinnati-Georgia game, they spent as much time talking about Marcus Freeman as they did Luke Fickell. And, like, Luke Fickell's like a big-time rising star as a head coach. And it's kind of funny, we were talking about – you know, Texas switching away from that three-man front and playing a four-man front this year. LSU did that, and that's why they hired Bo Pelini, and they fired him right away, and they're apparently targeting guys that are kind of more of these multiple fronts that could be a three-man front at times. So, yeah, I think Freeman, if you're looking for the guy that's going to, like, create the most headlines and get the most attention with a hire – for defensive coordinator spot, I think it's him. And maybe Steele would only be another name that is that recognized as a coordinator. I would say Freeman would even be more so recognized than Will Muschamp, just kind of because of Muschamp's lack of success as a head coach and things like that. I mean, Freeman is a guy, he's young. He's really on the rise. He's probably going to be a head coach sooner than later. That would be the one that would make everybody stop in their tracks.
Anybody think Dustin and I are overcooking the grits here on War? I mean, I oftentimes feel like you and Jason are the two voices of reason for Dustin and I. When Dustin and I are aligned, sometimes
Somebody write that down.
No, it's true. It's true. Sometimes if Dustin and I are on the same page, usually it's either Jason or Anwar that listens to us. A lot of times it's recruiting based. So it makes me think of Anwar more than you, Jason, where we start doing that recruiting riff, and it's almost like he and I are John and Paul. And Anwar's like, no, 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 no. And he'll tell us why. And we might not always agree, but there's usually a very solid case. Anwar, is there anything that you hear us sounding like we're the agents of Marcus Freeman? Are you putting your foot on the gas? Is there something as you hear us blather on about why we think he would be maybe the best hire that Sark could make, anything we're missing?
No, I mean, I think, you know, you've got to have someone, I mean, especially from a recruiting standpoint, that moves the needle a little bit, and hiring like the hot name, you know, definitely helps in that regard. You know, and like, you know, in Arnett, you probably just have to do a little bit more digging to find out, because, you know, everyone's going to know, okay, what have you done for me lately? You know, who you put in the pros? Like, that's basically what they want to see. And so at least with Freeman, you've got a lot of, like, newness of what you've done for me lately. And, like, you realize, like, okay, Cincinnati, like, that's not a program that should be where they were. It shouldn't be having the success that they were having. And, like, Dustin's correct. Like, Fickell clearly deserves a ton of credit. But, you know, at least if you get someone off that staff, you might have a kid that says, oh, yeah, that's what's up. Like, I get it. But outside of that, Ketch, you have a guys who may have had some success at their previous destination, but don't really have a lot of star power, don't really have a lot of, you know, everyone's like, oh, snap, like, you just hired that guy, which then means it takes a second to get it started in recruiting, because then it's going to be a little bit of, okay, well, let me see what you guys have, as opposed to you hire this and, you know, you kind of hit the ground running. So, yeah, I would definitely agree with you guys. I don't think you're overcooking it.
Is anybody – Alex, I'll go to you on this, because if there's anybody – I mean, I don't know, maybe I'm shortchanging Dustin. Arnett's such a new guy that – you know, it's not that people have never heard of him. And he did, if you pay attention to what people in the SEC say, because I cannot say that I watched a lot of Mississippi State football. I can't remember, maybe the A&M, like, I don't know. I can't remember in my head watching Mississippi State. But, it, you know, everybody's saying, oh, this guy did an amazing job, and that, you know, his side of the ball was better than Leach's side of the ball. And I know he comes from California, so that, you know, he has a huge California pedigree. So that part would make sense. But, you know, I don't know a lot about Arnett other than he seems very Manny Diaz-ish to me. One great year at Mississippi State, and then, you know, there's a Wonder Boy kind of label to him. I don't know that guy's next job needs to be at Texas, that on some level, and you could make the case that that's a negative for Marcus Freeman too, that this job, for the reason that Barry Odom might go, whoa. And I don't even know that Barry Odom hasn't done that. People that know Barry Odom have done it for him and said, ooh, I don't know that the fishbowl is where he needs to be. It is a fishbowl. And maybe Marcus Freeman's perfect for it because, you know, he's about to be a rising star. Maybe Arnett's ready for it because he's a rising star. But this job feels like it needs, I hate to say the guarantee on the box. There are so few of those. But I guess I would say a hire of either of those two guys, unproven at this level to some degree, is a bit more risky than if you hired Will Muschamp. If he fails, you can't say, well, it's because we, you know, everybody in the world would have thought, well, that's the right guy. So I don't know. This is a tricky one. This goes back to the head coaching search to a certain degree. It's hard to find perfect candidates because perfect candidates already have their jobs more times than not.
Did Marcus Freeman didn't have any crossover with Chris Ash at Ohio State when he was playing there, did he? Marcus Freeman's young. He's young. He was drafted in, like, what, 2010?
He's like 34, right?
Yeah, he's young. So I'd have to look back and see if there was any crossover there. I mean, just from the amount of research I've been able to do on this, I was like you, Ketch. I didn't know who Arnett really was. And you look it up, and I mean, you talk about this one great season, and on one hand, I say, okay, this great season we're talking about, he just took this team from being, what, 12th in the SEC to being fifth in overall defense. And I mean, that's good. I mean, is it, you put it in context and you say, well, is what makes it great the fact that having a good defense on a coach's team like Coach Mike Leach, who has absolutely no care and no philosophy within his bones about playing complementary football, right? Having a good defense in that sort of setup, it's not easy. How many good air raid teams or Mike Leach coaching tree teams have you ever seen give anyone shit about the defense? Or have, like, it's, I hate to paint with such a broad brush, but these teams don't, their interest isn't in playing complementary football. So from that standpoint, I do think it's impressive, but I'm kind of like on war too. You just feel like a guy like Freeman, he comes in, he's a little bit of a hotter name. They're both young. It feels like there's a little bit more buzz. It just feels like there's more of the buzz factor with him, to where the recruiting wouldn't take a year of players saying, look, you know, I'm interested. I love everything you guys are doing, Coach Sark, but I want to see what the defense. I mean, how many times have we heard these guys, whenever we've had these coaching changes, these searches, say, hey, I want to take some time. I want to watch the team this year, see how this coach plays out and stuff like that. I think you get a little bit more equity with some of these recruits, maybe if you bring in a guy like Freeman, be it fair or not, simply because it feels like he's coming in with this absolutely hot, you know, they were undefeated. Were they undefeated? Cincinnati, or one loss, whatever it was. You come in with this absolutely hot coach like this. This other coach where you say, well, he was able to make a meaningful difference on this defense and explain to them how it's really hard to play good defense whenever your head coach has such an offensive philosophy and does not want to play complementary football, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It feels like an easier pitch to me. So I think that I would definitely lean Freeman if my choice were between those two.
What do we think about the offensive staff and the makeup that we are seeing it make? Everybody's the idea of a comfort hire has been tossed around because he might be bringing a few guys from Alabama with him, which is kind of funny to me, because if you're ever going to make a comfort hire, make your comfort hires be from the team best program in the country. Jason, like, it looks like we know the quarterback coach. We know that Drayton's coming back. We know you can see the pieces kind of coming together. Wiggins, as a wide receivers coach coming over from Alabama, doesn't feel like there's a lot of opposition to that. Flood comes in, offensive line. Don't really know yet what would happen with the tight end position, because the Jeff Banks thing seems to have hit the side of a mountain to a certain extent, at least if you can go by what's, you know, I think Football Scoop is the one that came out with, first they reported that Banks was going to be on it, and like 5 minutes later, it sounded like somebody from the bank side of things said, no, put that is not going to happen. And then that's been snuffed out. There hasn't been a lot of tight end names, but other than Banks, I can't think of really anybody's name that's had any juice behind it. So of what we know, what's your vibe on the offensive staff?
Well, if you can't get Banks at the tight end position, then just go hire a stud recruiter. I mean, you know, I hate to minimize that position, but I think any football coach worth his salt could probably coach tight ends well enough, you know, and get some help from the O-line coach and the receivers coach. Just get a recruiter in that position. But, you know, my impression on what we know so far, I'm fine with it. I like it. You know, I think Flood as an offensive line coach would be a huge get if that comes to fruition like we think it's going to. And the bottom line catch is, like, I don't care that much. I just don't worry that much. I think it's Sarkisian's offense. I don't – just surround yourself with good recruiters. Let Sarkisian do his thing, and I'm pretty much fine with everything else. I mean, offensive line, you need a guy who's going to develop and coach up offensive line. But to me, it's all about recruiting, surrounding Sarkisian with good recruiters. I think it was on Dustin's column. Someone asked me that question. I was like, recruiting always trumps coaching development for me. Like I said, you know, Nick Saban, Urban Meyer, Ryan Day, Dabo Sweeney, those guys aren't so much better coaches than everybody else. They just have so much better talent. I think if you find guys who can surround Steve Sarkisian with talent, meaning they can recruit well, then you can cover a lot of flaws in their positional coaching abilities. So I'm fine with it. I like Flood as an offensive line coach. Whoever they bring in as tight end coach and wide receiver coach, I think needs to be the recruiting rainmakers. I think both those guys, Stan Drayton, you know, we know what Drayton is. He's proven to be a better recruiter, I think, than sometimes people give him credit for. I don't call Stan Drayton an ace recruiter necessarily. I think he does a good job with evaluations, early evaluations. He gets help from people around him to, you know, he's able to build trust with kids. He gets help from guys like Brian Carrington and other people on staff to kind of help close the deal. But yeah, overall, I think anything he does will be fine as long as they are good recruiters. I think Flood fits the bill. What's I'm drawing a blank catch on the quarterback's coach's name. Guy from Arkansas
Millie.
State.
Millie.
Yeah, Millie. Thank Millie. You, Dustin. You know, a bit unproven, but hey, if he's Sarkisian's right-hand man, as it's been described to us, I'm certainly not going to doubt Sarkisian. So, you know, I like it so far. I think he just needs to close with some, you know, heavy hitters and from a recruiting standpoint to round out that offensive staff.
And Dustin, we –
Oh, my bad. Go ahead.
No, go for it, Oliver.
Well, I was just going to jump in, and I was just wanted to just kind of piggyback one of the things that I know we're talking about the new guys, but I was just going to piggyback of what Jason said about Drayton. You know, retaining Drayton, I think, is pretty huge just because, you know, Jason could attest to this. There are recruits out there, and I don't know what kind of wonders that Stan works, who are basically saying, like, I just loved Stan Drayton. Like, he has this appeal to guys. And, you know, when you start talking about like recruiting, I mean, you know, he can drop the Ezekiel Elliott card at any moment or Carlos Hyde, and everyone knows who that is. And they feel great about that. So, you know, when you're talking about like Bijan and his development, having Stan back, you know, probably helps with that development because at least he's recruited him, he's worked with him. So how you take him to the next level, be curious to see if, how that running back rotation plays out now with a different coach and a different OC. But, you know, Stan is also, I mean, that being said, I mean, that still puts them probably in contention for LJ as a, you know, to potentially acquire him. You know, Stan Drayton's, you know, I thought Jonathan Brooks, when they evaluated him and offered, I was just like, what the hell? Had snarky comments about Houston Baptist. That guy looks pretty damn good. I mean, you guys have better eyes for what the state of Texas looks like, but I mean, he damn near had a damn near good season this year. Roshan has been really solid from a guy who's converted from quarterback, just been solid. I'm not saying been great, but very, you know, solid, more productive than I would have ever thought he would have been. So keeping Stan Drayton, I think ends up being a really good move for him. I'm not quite sure how many people he would have hired that would have been much better.
It's interesting, Dustin. I don't know that there's a rainmaker on this staff yet. And I think that is the one, a few of the pieces that we're waiting on. And maybe you've got to figure out who your DC is going to be so that he can get his guy. And then you know exactly what positions you're waiting, you know, potentially for your defensive line coach to come in from the NFL and he's got a decision to make. But it doesn't change the fact that they've got some guys on here that appear to be good recruiters, right? I mean, I think Wiggins will be thought of as a good recruiter. He's only really had success in that department from what I can see, real success at Alabama. So it's hard to know how much of that is Alabama and how much of that is he is. But, I mean, you know, Saban doesn't bring him on by accident. But, you know, I don't – you tell me, is there any – in from your mind, are there any rainmakers yet on this staff? Do we overuse that word? Or do they – is that one of the final few real missing pieces that need to be added in here? There isn't a Banks at tight end. We don't really have Tosh coming in yet as a defensive line coach. So, you know, the confirmations in those departments haven't been made yet. And, you know, if those types of hires don't happen, it'll, you know, there was disappointment when it didn't happen with Herman. And I think it would be disappointment if history repeated itself.
Yeah, you know, guys like Wiggins and, you know, and Flood, if those end up being guys that are on the staff, they're certainly going to be able to point to a lot of unique success that, you know, guys that the Texas has recently hired through the last two head coaching changes couldn't quite do. So I think that that's really going to help them on the recruiting trail. Now, they're not going to arrive with the reputation of, you know, just being these legendary recruiters. And I think that that's where, you know, that's why I think the tight end job and then also the defensive line, those are particularly important in that regard, because those are typically two areas where you can kind of see staffs really target somebody that is just a all out awesome recruiter. And more so than like this amazing developmental position coach. So I think that the current offensive staff projection, let's call it, I think it's good. I think it has a chance to be, with the right tight end hire, I think it has a chance to be great. In that regard, defense, you know, as we were kind of going through the defensive coordinator names, obviously is much more so up in the air. But yeah, I don't think that, you know, maybe we do use that word too much. I think that it's reserved for guys that are clearly in like the top maybe 1% of just these like recruiting juggernauts that around the country. There's really not that many of those guys. But I do think the early makings of this staff projection, which is mostly on offense, I think that it's got a good recruiting base. It's got an opportunity to be really good with those right hires, those guys that, you know, like I think was Jason said, like the tight end position, like just get a recruiter in that role, you know, get somebody that can go out and get guys on the offensive side of the football. And, you know, however you want to label the defense, give a guy a label, but know that you've got to have at least one of those guys that is known as a recruiter can go out and get guys. But I think certainly this offensive staff, to me, if the projection ends up coming to fruition, which we think it will, has the immediate, it's kind of starting at a base level to me that's higher than any coaching staff that's been hired recently, whether it was Charlie Strong or Tom Herman on that side of the football.
It's hard to argue that on the offensive staff. It seems like that's been the critical, like where people have picked the bones out for the last two hires have been on that side of the ball. It was Sean Watson, it was Tim Beck, and it was everything else rolled into one. Anybody else? What are we not talking about yet as it relates to what we're seeing on the assistant coaches? Anything?
I think we've touched on it all, but yeah, I think every time I think about the staff and where things are right now, the defensive coordinator is just such a fascinating thing. You know, it just with kind of the names that are flying out there, I don't know. It makes me wonder if Sarkisian's kind of, I don't know if he has an ace up his sleeve, but you know, there's an opportunity just to go out and make it just a monstrous hire. And I think what happens with Marcus Freeman in college football will be fascinating, because I think he's clearly the guy just based on what's going on with LSU going after him. And, you know, we've heard some mention of Notre Dame and, you know, the potential money thrown at this guy. He seems like the one that's going to kind of create the rest of the dominoes for that position in college football.
Dustin, it's a little strange that Texas is back in the Jimmy Sexton universe, because
that usually means that you're probably targeting the right guys, though. I mean, you know, like that's, you know, that's kind of like once you start getting into the circles of like being linked to the same guys like LSU and Notre Dame and some of these other programs are targeting, like it's kind of like, okay, like, you know, Texas is probably trying to jump up to that big boy rank. I almost think it's a good thing. Like, you know, not that like, you know, getting into that web is like fun, but it's been a while, you know, since Texas has kind of been like linked to a bunch of his guys, which I kind of think is kind of a good thing.
It's been since Saban. It's been since the Saban thing ended the way the Saban thing ended. And it felt like Texas for the last 7 years has basically said, we're not in the Jimmy Sexton business. And now they are again. And there's a part of me that when I heard Dan Quinn's name mentioned earlier, my first response was in my head, who's his agent? Because it won't be an accident. Honestly, we should do a war room tonight. And if we could get Sexton's client list, we should just roll it all out. We should just keep an eye forevermore on all of these guys, because Texas does live in a Sexton world now. It is, it's not an accident that the first two DCs, whose names outside, you know, Muschamp and Odom as names, the first two names, Sexton clients. Jason, the fact that there's also been a search firm involved in this and sitting in on the calls and, you know, helping. I mean, that's what they do. The turnkey that you linked yesterday in an update. I don't know, the whole thing, as we kind of wind up the assistant coaching thing, it is just, you know, this is being done in a different way than the last two coaching searches were really done. Although there was a search firm obviously used when Patterson went and hired Charlie Strong, still
the infamous search firm.
Yes, yeah. But still, all of this is a little different. It's interesting to be covering it in the fashion that we do, knowing that, you know, these are different steps than we've seen taken almost in the last decade or so. Because Macwood is never into the Sexton thing a ton either, you know, so. The only real time Texas, Dustin, correct me if I'm wrong. If anybody can correct me on this, they flirted with Saban, and that was the infamous backdoor channels that were taking place between, you know, boosters talking directly to Sexton and trying to recruit Saban to Texas. I can't really think of anybody else. Anybody?
Not off the top of my head. It's a bummer that these lists aren't like publicly published. Like, I feel like one of the harder things to do is, like, you know, about coaching and stuff like that is like, oh, okay, who represents this guy? It seems like it's kind of kept off the internet. I can't really think of anybody off the top of my head.
I think Turnkey and having their client list would probably go a long way towards, you know, when you combine Sexton and you combine the search firm, and I was looking at Turnkey's like client list and I was like, oh wow. Okay. Just because I'm not involved in this, maybe I need to call Eric Winter and have him give me the breakdown of just cause I saw Eric Winter was following them Turnkey on Twitter and not that many people were, but this whole thing will be interesting to see how this, I'd love to hear when the dust clears and we hear, you start getting the word on really how all of this is unfolding in real time. It was a little bit of time to breathe and give it some space. It'll be interesting to see how all of this came together because there's different cooks in the kitchen than we've seen cooks in the kitchen before. Before we go into parting shots, anybody got any last coaching, any predictions, anything that we didn't cover before we wrap this up?
The only thing I would throw out there is for who's remaining, or do you think there's any guys remaining on the Texas staff that are, that he should keep around?
No. I think Oscar Giles is a good coach, and it's interesting because there was talk that depending on who the coordinator would be, you know, Giles has got history with everybody. He's just not a good enough recruiter. He's not terrible. They need a bona fide war daddy who can go into multiple states and make it happen in recruiting. And that guy's got to be on the staff somewhere. And Dustin mentioned, you know, tight ends and defensive line coaches, an area where you probably need to have guys like that that can do it. I think Oscar Giles is a perfectly fine coach. He's not a terrible recruiter. He does a good job of developing players. I don't think he's the right fit for what Texas needs right now in that position. And Boulware, I could do without him.
What about Hutzler at linebacker?
Hutzler? If it's me, I want a better recruiter. Hutzler is complete. He arrived at Texas completely unproven as a recruiter. He was a good developer, a player. And if Sarkisian comes in and says, I want to keep that guy, he's got a good reputation. He's young. He's, you know, there's a lot to like about Hutzler. But he is still completely unproven in recruiting, and that is so important to Sarkisian. I have a hard time believing it could be something that he would overlook. And if he doesn't know Hutzler that well and he's coming in, I think some of the first questions he would ask is, well, what's this guy done in recruiting? And at this point, he's got a very filled resume in that respect. I mean, he just didn't really do much at all at South Carolina, and he hasn't been at Texas. And to be fair to him, like, how could you even know? Because Anwar, as you've brought up, Hutzler hasn't even been able to go into a single coach's office since he's
been
here.
Has he left Austin since he's been here?
That's a good question.
Yeah, no, I think he's the one that you know, I would probably label has the best chance.
He probably does, but
the only one.
But how ironic would it be that the only guy other than Drayton that you might keep is a guy that literally has never been in a high school coach's office in the state of Texas?
But I think he's done a good job recruiting this year. I mean, he's shown that he's a good at developing relationships with these prospects and their parents, which is key. I mean, like you said, there's more to it. Once the world gets back to some normalcy, there's a lot more to it than that. But I think he's shown that he has that aspect pretty well covered. So, yeah, I think Hutzler, if he was kept, would be, you know, I think it'd be a fine decision to retain him. But, you know, would I stand on the table and say he must be retained? No, I'm not to that point.
I think if anybody disagree with this, if they keep Hutzler, everybody's first reaction would be, oh, he's a good coach. Right, that's the first thing we think about with Hutzler, right?
Young linebackers are playing well.
I think that's the first. The developmental is kind of the first word I would think of.
Because I think I'd give him like at least a B+ this year on the field. Anybody go lower than that?
No, yeah. With the way they finished, I think that's fair.
Especially in the bowl game when, you know, Juwan Mitchell can't play in the first half, and they're playing a guy in the middle of that defense against one of the Pac-12's best running teams. And a future Sunday running back, I think. And, like, that position did well. All I'm saying is Sarkisian is so big on recruiting. And I wonder what – you know, I mean, Hustler's linebacker class was okay. But, you know, I mean, Derek Harris committed before Hustler was ever on campus. I don't know that he's the reason why Maurice Blackwell committed. I mean, Blackwell committed a couple of months after he showed up. Terrence Cooks? Jason, who was the Terrence Cooks leader in that recruitment?
Yeah, that'd be Hutzler. He'd be the main one of the three you mentioned. Yeah, it'd be.
So, you know, it's a high three-star linebacker. We all like Terrence Cooks and thinks he's a good player and a good prospect. But I don't know. It'll be interesting to see where we go there. Again, Sarkisian's got to find a place somewhere. And the other thing is, you know, at some point, it looks like they're going to have two secondary coaches, right? So, you know, wherever the defensive coordinator slots in as his position will dictate a lot of this. But I think, what do you think? You think Hutzler sticks around?
No, Eileen, no.
I don't think he does, but I think he's got the best shot too.
I don't know. Jason and I were talking about
especially
this.
if all the Muschamp stuff was
yeah.
And it sounds like it was a thing. I mean, that was one of his guys. So, you know.
What's funny because behind the scenes, there had been some talk that Hutzler was pretty cool around, you know, not stressing. Short
word, business as usual.
Yeah, like just not stressing over the thing that everybody else was stressing over, which was uncertainty. So, you know, if there's a guy that's on the staff that's been, other than Drayton, has been acting like he's coming back. But if he was coming back, they could have already put that out. Like he could have done what Drayton did, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
like you said, maybe he's just comfortable because he has a backup plan lined up, or maybe he's just young and oblivious and just doesn't worry about that stuff. I don't know.
To be young again. I'll get a job somewhere. Who cares? All right. Well, then let's go into parting shots. Mr. Richardson will go in. No, if we're going to go in alphabetical order, it would be Alex that would go first because A-L is before A-N. So, Mr. Dunlap, welcome back to the podcast. First parting shot. What you got?
We got to go to that second letter for me. We got to go to the second letter. I'm just ahead of Anwar by the skin of my teeth here. I don't know, man. I don't have much of a parting shot. Maybe I'll just, you know, how about Tyler Johnson? We can talk about that. He started at right guard in the Alamo Bowl and played really well, actually. I mean, the way that I graded it, he played better than Denzel Okafor played in any game this season, and that includes the UTEP game. He did allow one tackle for a loss, did Tyler Johnson, but that was on 61 total snaps. If you look back at what Denzel Okafor has done at right guard over the course of this season and take into account that Denzel Okafor has had the benefit of lining up next to a senior leader and team captain and Derek Kerstetter for the season, as opposed to another true freshman, or as opposed to a true freshman and Jake Majors, number 65, that Tyler Johnson had to line up next to in his one start. Denzel Okafor allowed, you know, some sort of disruption or a committed a penalty on one every 16.28 snaps, which is the worst of any of these guys that I've been doing since I've been doing this, you know, dating back to now to 2013. This was, I guess, the seventh year of doing the deep dig, and that was the worst ever. So Tyler Johnson looks like he should probably start over Denzel Okafor next season, even though Denzel Okafor will be coming back for a second year. I would not pencil with a new coaching staff coming in, with them being able to watch that Alamo Bowl tape, I simply wouldn't pencil in Denzel Okafor to be the starter come next year. And that's a good thing, man, because now we've seen Tyler Johnson, who basically we kind of needed to come along here because he got a lot of the high end, high upside talent on this Texas offensive line with the young guys was kind of centered around that dude. He arguably has the best pedigree of anybody on the whole Texas. I think maybe it could be inarguably, I'd be interested to hear what Jason says, like probably the best recruiting pedigree of anybody on the Texas offensive line currently. And he moves better than Okafor. He is not quite as strong as Okafor, but he is just better first step, and just so much more flexible through his upper half. Not as stiff, more able to generate movement off the line, not necessarily through brute strength, but just being able to execute those reach blocks in the outside zone scheme that we know Sarkisian will continue to bring with him once he gets here. So, I mean, as far as Tyler Johnson's concerned, things are looking up. We've already talked about Jake Majors and Andre Carrick. So as far as the immediate near term with the offensive line, I think based on now two games we've seen of Carrick and Majors and one game that we've seen of Tyler Johnson, I think it's basically everything you could have hoped for if you were a Texas fan, and it's certainly on the upper range of possible outcomes of how this thing could have looked. Now, as far as depth, there's no question. Texas needs to get back off. They need to get up off their ass and start recruiting stud offensive linemen again and not letting these guys leave the state of Texas or just going wherever the hell you need to go to find them. But for the immediate near term, it feels like there's a pretty good core of some young guys who've stepped up to a larger degree than I would have imagined. And to be honest, Ketch, I kind of feel as good about those three guys coming into next year as I feel about a guy like Christian Jones who started all year long. So those are positive outcomes. And certainly, like I said, it's not like the riddle's been answered at offensive line. I'm not saying all is fixed and that we don't need to worry. But I'm saying for the immediate near term, if we can stave off some injuries, if it feels like we're sort of at the upper range of the possible outcomes that we had envisioned coming into 2021.
It's interesting, Alex. We got to a point where we had said the margin of error for Texas with its young offensive linemen was zero. Like, they almost had to get to a point where they've got a hit on all their guys because they've been boxed into that position. And who knows, maybe the last thing that Herb Hand will do on his way out the door is help Texas begin the process of hitting on all of those guys. That, because if any of those guys either A, were to get hurt, or B, not pan out, boy, suddenly there's gaps. And doesn't feel like – I'm with you. Doesn't feel like there's a single gap right now. And that's – I wouldn't have thought I would be this optimistic about the offensive line 2 months ago. Not even close. Oh, my God, not even close.
Not close.
Really not. And I would have liked all those guys, but I'd have been like, oh, I don't know about Jake Majors right away.
Or the fact that it was right away and the fact that all three look good. Like, yeah. Like, well, maybe if we get two or three. Like, you know, like, but, I mean, it is what it is. And it does feel like it's sort of on the – just on the very upper tier of what people could have expected. So that's some positivity that we could be taking into 2021, along with all the new excitement of the unknown regarding the new coaching staff.
It's like, congrats, Texas. This is what it's like when good things happen in the program. Anwar, parting shot?
Yeah, so I am really proud of myself, Ketch. And I think I don't know who's the healthiest mod out there. I don't know if it's Dustin or maybe Alex. I know it's Jason's definitely not on the list.
What?
But it's between, you know, Alex does a lot of like manual labor, likes going into the gym and stuff. But, you know, Dustin looks great. And, you know, Dustin's body transition has been fantastic to watch. So I finished a 3-day juice cleanse. It's the first time I've embarked or tried something like that. And I thought that it was going to be like really, really tough. I was expecting like the worst, but you had six juices throughout the day, try to, you know, put a little salt on a little bit of a celery just to make sure you have some salt intake, but successfully started on Monday, finished it up last night, and I'm good to go. And I feel like my energy level was a little bit better. Oh, didn't have alcohol for 3 days, which, shit, that's the longest time that's happened in years. I feel pretty decent about myself. So it was a mental challenge for sure. I was a little pissy at times. I had to kind of, you know, just know within myself, like, all right, you know, you're in a bad mood because you're not eating, but not as bad as I thought it would be. I think it's more mental than anything else. So, you know, just happy that I was able to start off the new year right. And I'm sure I will, you know, get some pluckers for my free birthday wings at some point today. But at least for those 3 days, definitely was pretty healthy.
Congratulations.
Did Anwar just sneak in the fact that today's his birthday?
No. It was the other week. No. But you know, pluckers, you got like a little bit of time.
Yeah, you got that like that week or 2 week period where you can cash it in.
I didn't even know you had a birthday, brother. So happy birthday to you, man.
We should be Facebook friends one day or something.
You think I have a Facebook and have everybody in the world spying on me?
That's like, true. Do you think Alex has a Facebook?
I think he does, but I don't think any of us are on it. So I would say that.
Do you think he's got a secret Facebook page?
A burner?
I think he has Facebook. I just don't think we're his on there. I think like Jason won't play fantasy football with us. That's how I think Alex is. He probably has something, but he just doesn't let us in.
What's his secret page?
Everybody can have their theories.
Dustin, parting shots.
Yeah, Anwar, you should be proud of yourself. As juice cleanser are not easy, man, especially coming out of the new year. And especially right now that like you've timed poorly putting alcohol to the side right now, because I know coaching searches and things like that. Amen. Oh, that's something. But on Monday I hit the 400 ride mark on my Peloton. So I was pretty pumped about that.
That's the healthiest.
400 rides. I've gotten into a good groove of either I go on a walk or like a short jog, because I hate running, but I know it's a hell of a workout, and then kind of do a quick class, or I'll do like a 30-minute class when the game is on or whatever. So I didn't know when we got that if I'd fall in love with it the way I have, but it's been nice to have before. It certainly helped me out a lot. But basketball team 3-0 for the first time in Big 12 play since 2011, which was also the last time they were ranked inside the top five. It's kind of crazy to think it's been that long since Texas has started 3-0 in the league. But, you know, I thought, first off, covering a game with nobody in the Irwin Center besides the players in like three media members is totally bizarre. It was one of the strangest things I've ever experienced. It just, on the plus side, you can kind of hear the players and coaches, especially when they're screaming. You can kind of hear what's going on, which is cool, because we usually don't get to do that since we sit way up top and not down near courtside. But it was just a bizarre thing. But I thought the most interesting thing about that game, you know, Texas coming off that win at Kansas, 25-point win, you know, coming off that great high, human nature, you expect to be a little bit of a letdown. And I thought Texas handled Iowa State's first punch really well, played a great first half. In the second half, they had one of their poor defensive halves, but it was weird. Texas just had a different confidence about them, and so many times I've watched this program, and this is especially true when fans are in the stands, you can almost see this nervous energy start increasing throughout the game. You can kind of see guys play a little tighter. You kind of get this anxious feeling like, oh, no, here they go again. They're going to play hard, but they're going to screw this up and figure out a way to lose this game. And it was odd that, you know, Texas was almost too confident as the game started to get close down the stretch. And Iowa State deserves some credit for some of their shot making and things like that. But it was like a Texas team that was like, hey, you know what? We got this under control. You know, we're going to make enough plays to win this game. We've got this thing on lockdown. And that's just not something we've really seen from Texas in a long, long time, kind of that feeling of maybe being too confident, but not that lingering feeling of just this anxiety of another approaching close game and, whoa, no, what if a disaster type of thing happens? So You know, we'll see what happens this weekend up at West Virginia. Obviously, the last time Texas went to West Virginia, they lost by a lot. I think it was 97-59. And the score, I mean, it felt larger than the final score. It was one of the most thorough ass-kickings I've ever seen in college basketball. And I thought it was really interesting that Andrew Jones, after the Iowa State game, was asked, you know, do you guys West Virginia something up there, you know, like, because, you know, last time Texas played Iowa State, you know, Iowa State put it on a big time, and that was something that was on the front of Texas minds. And Andrew Jones said, we owe everyone something, you know, that they've kind of got this approach, like, it's not about just one team or, you know, response to last year or whatever. It's about sending a message to the entire league, which I thought was especially interesting, that it's not, you know, this is a group that thinks it's got a ton to prove to the entire league, not just some of the teams that handed them gigantic lopsided defeats last year. So I'm looking forward to seeing what happens on the hardwood on Saturday at West Virginia. But this Texas team so far, it's just statistically, it's been, you know, one of the most consistent teams in a long time through this point in the season. Obviously, the 3-0 start is something that hasn't happened in a long while, but there just seems to be a little bit different maturity and confidence level with this group right now that makes me think that it certainly has a better chance to reach its potential than maybe any Texas team that we've seen in some time.
Mr. Sukumel.
I don't have a ton. Anwar, but first of all, I'll have you know I did the couch to 5K day one yesterday, and I had no problem running that 1 minute that it asked me to run. Run a minute, walk a minute and a half, run a minute, walk. Yeah, I was like, yeah, this isn't so bad.
You're doing the 5K over the 365 days, right? You know, just a little bit at a time, added up.
Probably that's what it'll end up being. And truth be told, it'll never amount to 5K, but it's, I think it's supposed to be like a month or something, Dustin. I don't remember, man. But that's my New Year's resolution to get it. I told you all this story on Slack the other day. This wasn't going to be my parting shot, but New Year's resolution, the wife and I are, all right, we're going to get in shape. We're going to lose some weight, you know, still have this trip that I keep mentioning got canceled last year. It's our incentive. Let's lose some weight for hopefully a beach trip sometime this year. I put on my running clothes. We didn't do it on January 1. We said, let's get through the weekend. So we started on Monday. Monday, I put on my running clothes. And in fact, something came up with a coaching search. And it was like, hey, I think Catchy sent a message like, hey, can someone update the thread? I was like, yeah, I got it. So I literally was like jogging up the stairs and I stubbed my toe so bad. I'm like, oh crap. And no big deal. I get to the office in my little area, my office area, and I update the thread. And I'm like, damn, my toe is really throbbing. And I look down and I'm not shitting, man. It was like a bloodbath all over the floor under my foot. I busted up my toe pretty good. All my good intentions starting, I mean, I was energized like Monday. I was like, for the first time, I was like, you know, I feel really good. I'm pumped about dieting and exercising, and then that happened. So, but I'm kind of trying to power through it. No, I don't remember the whole point of that was. Yeah, Dustin, is it probably won't be in 5K is the answer to that. But my true parting shot, kind of slow right now in recruiting. Steve Sarkisian's reached out to a couple of the committed guys. The bigger news, he and some staff members had a Zoom meeting with LJ Johnson. I talked to three sources this week. Everybody feels pretty good about Texas's chances there. So I think Texas is going to get LJ Johnson, but nobody said, hey, it's a done deal. I mean, it's, you know, you put percentages in or whatever, on it or whatever, but I think Texas is a team to beat there. One of the more interesting things that I thought came out of my conversations on Tuesday, I think it was, when I was talking to these people, we were talking about Jonathan Brooks, and I said, yeah, you know, I've always kind of valued him a little bit more than I think some people did. And he kind of backed it up with this play this year. And one person told me, and I haven't even told the OB staff this, there are people inside the program that feel Jonathan Brooks might be the best running back prospect in the entire country in this 2021 class. That's how I've always heard he was valued very highly by the Texas staff. They found they thought they found a hidden gem in him. But that's the word that I was given by one person this week. Do I agree with it? Not necessarily. I don't know if I'd put him that high, but, you know, I think Texas found themselves a real kind of a hidden gem at the time when they recruited or committed Jonathan Brooks. So running back recruiting looks pretty good. There's still confidence in Jaden Blue next year. So We'll say we could have an answer from LJ Johnson literally in the next week, because there's a chance he could enroll at the school of his choice in January. He did graduate in December. More likely, I think at this point, he'll probably wait and sign until February and enroll in the summer. But, you know, if he just wakes up and is ready to do it and he has a clear mind, he could decide in the next week and enroll in January. A week from today is when most guys are moving down to Austin, moving into Austin, the early enrollees. So we'll be keeping an eye on that. And if he decides early, I think it's definitely going to be the Longhorns. So we'll keep a close eye on that situation over the next week.
As for my parting shot, by the way, thanks for the toe story, Jason. That was memorable.
Almost wanted to send y'all an image of it just to gross y'all out and ruin your week.
Dude. So sad you didn't. I was, you know, did not have that actual picture to go along with the story. Turns out to be really disappointing.
Hey, I taped that shit up and went for a run that same day, though. So ain't no holding me back, man.
I just, I was telling this to Anwar yesterday, and I'm going to say it on the podcast. I'm going to give myself my own personal attaboy for, over the course of the last, I don't know, like 6 months, not saying a single political thing for 6 months. And I'm not starting today. I'm just want to point out that we made it through an election and yesterday, and at no point did anybody go to Orange Bloods and say that I said something on Twitter. So nobody on the board is giving me an attaboy for staying out of trouble. So I'm giving myself an attaboy for some self-restraint.
If it feels good, huh? It feels good not to have to deal with all the deal with everybody.
There's a lot of emotions, Alex, that are felt in one's life. I will just say, to not constantly have people mad at me over the weird thing is when I would say something that I literally wouldn't think is controversial, and then like 9 years later, someone would reference it and say, "You said this back in 2011, and you're a fucking asshole." And I'd, "Oh, wow, you remember that. Sorry about that." So, yes, I've been off the grid, and I'm giving myself a pat on the back just because sometimes self-encouragement sometimes is the only way to get yourself through life. For myself and Anwar and Alex and Dustin and Jason, all of whom also have found a way to not get themselves in trouble in social media over the course of the last half year, we're like the safety team. Thanks for listening. Who knows? Maybe we'll do like another modcast if there's a defensive coordinator. I think we're going to do something. Anwar, what do you think about a Facebook Be Live show after the national championship game? There have been some requests for that. It sounded like it could be fun.
You think people will watch?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, let's do it. I may be a little saucy.
I was about to say. Anyway. <You won't. laughs>
Which means it'll be better.
Yes. It'll be a real... People's expectations at that point won't be professionalism, because you won't be in a suit in the press box.
It'll be in my house.
Nobody does Facebook Live shows at 11 o'clock sober.
Yeah, you're right. It's gonna be awesome. It'll be in my house, no mask.
So yeah.
Why are you wearing a mask? I'm kind of like, you 10 shows in. I'm like, yo, do you not know the rules yet? So
like, why are you wearing a mask?
Someone made a comment saying, looks like I was wearing a diaper on my face.
Is there a mask on my face? I hadn't even noticed. For all of us in our homes right now, some wearing masks, hopefully everybody wearing underwear. We'll do this again next week. Later. All right. Hey, Anwar, definitely send me a copy of your recording.